I'm Marco Werman from PRI's The World. This is a special podcast we want to share with you. We're going to take you to Africa to spend some time with a former U.S. president. Our health and science editor David Barron recently traveled to southern Sudan and met up there with Jimmy Carter. David went to Sudan to produce a story about a global effort to eradicate a horrific disease. The disease is Guinea worm, and it afflicts some of the poorest people in the most desolate regions. Well, if things go as planned, Guinea worm will be wiped from the face of the earth in the next few years, and Jimmy Carter will have played an important role. So what we're going to bring you on this podcast is a feature story that David Barron did for our radio show, and we'll follow that with an extended interview with Jimmy Carter that did not air on the show. Now, I should warn you, this podcast is not for the squeamish. It contains disturbing imagery. Here is David's story.
Jimmy Carter's first direct experience with guinea worm was in West Africa. He visited Ghana and traveled to a hard-hit village.
It's about the size of Plains, Georgia, where I live, about 500 people. And 300 of its citizens had guinea worm.
Now, if you're not familiar with guinea worm, brace yourself. It's not a pleasant condition. You get it by drinking contaminated water. You don't know you've been infected until a year later when you develop a painful blister. Then a worm slowly emerges. It can be as much as a yard long, and it can come out through your leg, your arm, just about anywhere.
The most memorable experience was a beautiful young woman, I think about 19 or 20 years old, and I thought she was holding a baby in her arms, and I went over to talk to her child, and I found out she was holding her right breast in her arm instead of a baby, and a guinea worm was coming out of a nipple of her breast, and she was in excruciating pain. We found out later that year that she had 11 other guinea worms emerge simultaneously from her body.
That was 1988. At the time, guinea worm plagued millions of people in 20 countries in Africa and Asia. Not anymore.
We've gotten rid of the disease now in Cameroon, Niger.
Dr. Donald Hopkins launched the Global Guinea Worm Eradication Campaign 30 years ago.
Uganda.
It started at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. But he soon moved the campaign to Jimmy Carter's Atlanta-based Carter Center.
Nigeria.
Ever since, the Carter Center has helped countries set up national programs to defeat the disease.
We've also gotten rid of it in Pakistan and Yemen.
Only a few thousand cases remain, and almost all of those cases are in one region of one country, southern Sudan.
The last guinea worm on Earth will be from somewhere close to where we're standing right now.
And where we're standing is in the village of Lodjara in southern Sudan's Terekeka County. It's hard to imagine a place more cut off from the modern world. There's no electricity, no shops, no roads, just huts of mud and thatch scattered in the brush. A boy, naked and barefoot, herds his family's goats. Village chief Jakeo Leung Lado says when he was a boy, guinea worm swept through his family.
My mother had guinea worm, my father had guinea worm, my sisters had guinea worm. Nobody could cook, nobody could fetch water. My father was the headman of the village. When he saw that everybody had guinea worm, he became so upset he hanged himself. He took his own life.
Back then, many considered guinea worm a curse from God. No one knew what caused it or how to prevent it. Even today, there's no cure for guinea worm, no vaccine, no drugs to combat it. But its transmission can be stopped if a patient is identified early and treated. On this day, the patient is a man named Dario Merritt. He's stick thin in a tattered shirt. He sits on a papyrus mat while the village watches, and two health volunteers lean over his left leg. A worm pokes out of an open sore. Simon Taban of southern Sudan's guinea worm eradication program is here to supervise the treatment.
He had multiple worms? Yeah, multiple worms. The first one was removed the day before yesterday.
The second one is being removed today. A health volunteer gently pulls on the worm, trying to coax it out of Mary's body.
As you keep pulling it, slowly, slowly, you keep massaging it until it finally comes out.
You don't want to break the worm, that can leave a portion of it in the patient, causing infection and inflammation and permanent disability. So day by day, inch by inch, the treatments continue. The worm is wound around a piece of gauze. When Dario Mary's worm finally comes out, it looks like a long strand of angel hair. Until the worm is removed, it's critical that the patient stay away from water sources, like ponds, that locals use for drinking. If the patient bathes or swims there, the worm will release its larvae into the water, and if people then drink that water, they'll become infected. So another critical part of eradicating guinea worm is making sure that if people do drink from a contaminated water source, they can protect themselves. The Carter Center and its partners distribute basic water filters made of mesh cloth and plastic piping that people here use to filter the larvae out. It's simple technology. What's hard is distributing millions of filters to thousands of villages and making sure that everyone uses the filters every time. All it takes is one gulp of contaminated water, and the goal of eradication can be set back another year. And that's why Jimmy Carter ventured to southern Sudan last month to rally the local workers and the public for what he hopes is the final push. While a chorus sang a welcome song, a line of white Land Cruisers approached the village of Lojera through the brush, kicking up dust. Secret Service agents stepped out, then the former U.S. president. Jimmy Carter conferred briefly with local health workers.
What's the main thing you'd like for me to say? Congratulate him on progress made.
He took a seat under a tent beside a banner that read Stop Guinea Worm in 2010. Then he stepped up to a podium planted in the dirt.
Thank you, Kevin. Well, it's a great honor and pleasure for me to come to this wonderful place in Sudan, southern Sudan. We're very grateful at the great progress that has been made here in reducing the incidence of guinea worm. As you may know, when we first began our project in southern Sudan, there were more than 100,000 cases that we found, and I'm sure there were many others that we could not discern at that time. Last year, we had about 2,500 cases, and we believe that in the next two or three years, we'll have zero cases of guinea worm in Sudan.
President Carter shook hands with health workers. He accepted ceremonial gifts. He held photo ops with babies.
Hi, how beautiful.
Then the motorcade left, and the village was back to its daily struggles. And those struggles are considerable. These people are hungry and poor in a land scorched by decades of civil war. The war is over, but tribal fighting remains. And there is growing political tension, with nationwide elections scheduled for next month and a vote on independence for southern Sudan planned for next year. Many fear this region could spiral back into war, and that could undo the progress against guinea worm. McCoy Samuel Yibi heads southern Sudan's guinea worm eradication program.
If we had to run away because there is fighting, or if the community is displaced and moving in any direction where you cannot know where they went to, and then, of course, you will be missing cases, and in that way there will be no chance of interrupting transmission. So that's the worst nightmare, actually, for the program.
Of course, if war resumes, the people of southern Sudan will have a lot more than guinea worm to worry about. But if peace holds, getting rid of guinea worm could help this region rebuild and prosper. Farmers will be healthier, better able to plant crops. Children will be less likely to miss school, assuming, that is, they have a school to go to. If the global eradication effort succeeds, it'll be thanks to many people in many countries over many years. Jimmy Carter likes to say he's just one of those people. Of course, given his prominence, he was able to bring money and attention to the fight. He helped make the world care about an otherwise neglected disease. President Carter is now 85 years old, and I wondered, where would he rank the defeat of guinea worm on his list of life's accomplishments?
I would say very near the top.
Seriously?
Seriously. We brought peace between Israel and Egypt, and we opened up diplomatic relations with China and did some other things that I need not mention. But I think that when we see the last case of guinea worm gone from the earth, there would be few, if any, other achievements of my life of which I would be more proud.
And he's already planning a return trip to southern Sudan in a few years, he hopes, to celebrate the death of the last guinea worm. For the world, I'm David Barron, Lodjara Village, southern Sudan.
During his time in Sudan, David Barron had several opportunities to sit down with Jimmy Carter to ask him about guinea worm, about why he took on this campaign, and the role of his Christian faith and his upbringing. We thought you might like to hear one of those interviews in its entirety, so that's what we have next. This is an interview David conducted on the last of Jimmy Carter's 3 days in southern Sudan last month.
President Carter, good to see you again.
Good to be with you and your many listeners.
I wonder if, first of all, you could just tell me about your first encounter with guinea worm. What did you see, and what was your reaction?
Well, after leaving the White House, we didn't really know what the Carter Center would do. We thought at first that our goal would be just to resolve conflicts, that I would set up something like a little Camp David, so people that had a prospective civil war or an ongoing war could come to me, and I would mediate between them and help bring peace. And we still do that. But I had a national drug czar when I was president named Dr. Peter Bourne. He was an expert on all the production of narcotics around the world and that sort of thing. And after we both left the White House, he went to the United Nations and became an assistant Secretary General of the United Nations. And so as an experienced medical doctor with knowledge of the world, they gave him the assignment of running the so-called Decade on Water. And they emphasized the importance of clean, fresh water to drink all over the world and how it adversely impacted on the lives of people. So one of the most intriguing cases that he discovered was dracoon colliasis, or commonly known as guinea worm. He didn't know how far extensive it was. He just knew the dreaded impact of it. So he showed us some slides and movies, as a matter of fact, at lunch hour. Most of us got nauseated. And afterwards, I told Peter to let me know who in the world was working on the disease. He said practically no one wants to fool with it because it's so horrible and so isolated in its impact. And it seems to be intransigent as far as resolving the problem. So we decided to take it on. So the Carter Center adopted guinea worm as one of our first health projects. And we were lucky to find Dr. Don Hopkins at the Centers for Disease Control, just a few hundred yards from the Carter Center, who had been a foremost leader in the eradication of smallpox. So he knew the technique of eradicating diseases and how he knew the foreign countries involved and so forth. So he came to work full-time for the Carter Center to take on this project first. Now he's in charge of all our health programs. So we began our efforts in Pakistan. We had the guinea worm disease we knew in India, Yemen, and Pakistan, plus the rest of it was sub-Saharan Africa. So we went to Pakistan. I had a friend there. There was a general, a dictator, you might say, of Pakistan, General Zia, and he knew me, and I told him this was a special project of mine. So he basically turned over the government to get rid of guinea worm in Pakistan. He sent his top general to the Carter Center for several weeks of instruction, and when he went back, he had almost carte blanche in Pakistan to eradicate guinea worm. And within 3 years, they had zero cases of guinea worm. That was the first proof. And later we had Yemen and India follow.
But if I may ask, so when was the first time you met an actual guinea worm patient?
Okay, the first time I ever saw a guinea worm case was in Ghana. Ghana had a high incidence of guinea worm. They had 176,000 cases, I remember. And one of the villages impacted, or endemic, we call it, was just about 2 or 3 hours' drive from the capital of Accra. So we went to that little village. It's about the size of Plains, Georgia, where I live, about 500 people. And 300 of its citizens had guinea worm. And they were assembled under the shade trees around the town square by the chief. I remember there were 22 of them who couldn't drag themselves out of their huts to meet with us. And so we talked to the chief, told him what we were doing there. And then I went around and visited the people who had guinea worms coming out of different parts of their body. The most memorable experience was a beautiful young woman, I think about 19 or 20 years old, And I thought she was holding a baby in her arms, and I went over to talk to her child, and I found out she was holding her right breast in her arm instead of a baby. And a guinea worm was coming out of a nipple of her breast, and she was in excruciating pain. We found out later that year that she had 11 other guinea worms emerge simultaneously from her body. We had a very rich man with us, and he said, look, this is such a horrible case. I will personally send my people in here to dig a deep well for these people. So he did, and they found water there. It's quite prevalent in the southern part of Ghana. So within 2 months, we had a deep well dug for them so people no longer had to drink water out of the filthy pond that contained the guinea worm eggs. We went back there 1 year later, zero guinea worm. And that village has never seen guinea worm since then.
So right,
that was
so
my first real experience in seeing guinea worm and seeing how easily it is to correct. In most cases, though, particularly in the northern part of Ghana and many other places, when you dig a well, you don't find water. So they have to continue to get water out of the contaminated water hole that fills up during the rainy season, and then they have to survive on that water the rest of the year.
But what a thing to witness. I mean, two-thirds of this village affected by guinea worm. This poor, poor woman with 11 worms, that must have left a really deep mark on you.
It did. I've never forgotten it, obviously. I speak with it. I get somewhat emotional just thinking about the sight of it. But since then, of course, I've seen hundreds of people with guinea worms emerging from their bodies. I think the most pitiful cases, though, are the little children, about the same age as my youngest grandchildren, you know, 3, 4 years old, with guinea worms coming out of their arms and legs and hips and between the thighs and in the knee joints. And the problem is that when a guinea worm emerges from the inside of a human body a year later, after they drink the water with eggs in it, then it destroys the muscle tissue. So the aftermath of guinea worms, say it comes out right behind the knee of a person, is permanent deformation, just like the aftermath of polio that I knew when I was a child. The child's whole limb will be withered, so they are crippled for life. The terrible part for a village or a nation is the adverse impact not only of human suffering but also economic deprivation. The World Bank did a study in one very small county in the midst of Nigeria, and they found that the guinea worm alone cost that county $20 million annually in lost revenue, because the people couldn't go into the fields to plant the crop, to cultivate the crop, and to harvest their crop when they were afflicted with guinea worm. And, of course, no kids could go to school.
No question. It's a horrible disease. Of course, poor people in poor regions of the world suffer from many horrible diseases. And, honestly, some of the others affect a lot more people and are actually deadly, where guinea worm generally is not deadly. Why take on guinea worm? I realize the Carter Center has taken on other diseases, yeah, too, but why target this one for eradication?
Well, now we have 5 other diseases. I need not name them just to save time, on which we are working. But guinea worm was a disease that is truly neglected, to use the same word that the World Health Organization applies to it and 4 other diseases. In it, nobody much wanted to help with it. It's impossible for anyone to have guinea worm in a village where they have running water. If they have a stream there or a deep well there, no one will have guinea worm, because the eggs only breed in stagnant water in a pond that fills up during the rainy season and then survives there without any circulation the rest of the year. So every village in the world that we have attended, now 23,600 of them, has been an isolated village with no other source of water in an extremely arid area of that state or of that county when the rainy season is over.
You were up in Lojira Village yesterday. They grow peanuts there, and in fact they offered you some ground to cultivate.
Yes, they gave me some land. In fact, I've accumulated farms as gifts of the grateful villagers in many countries in Africa and 2 or 3 in Asia, where they want me to come back, you know, and start a groundnut farm next to that neighbor. They would like to have a rich former president being part of their community, but I appreciate it anyway. And this was a very great honor for me. And they also gave me the marks of a manhood, that is a bow and arrow that they carry themselves, even though they don't hunt with the arrows, and I still have it over here with the spear. So I've always feel honored to be included in the, I'd say, in the general social life of a grateful community that has helped us eradicate their own guinea worm. The important thing about guinea worm, too, is that almost all of the decisions, almost all of the determination and persistence and patience and confidence and faith has to be among the people themselves. You can't have outsiders do that. We can tell them what causes guinea worm. They're just drinking the water out of their sacred pond. In fact, they look on the pond as part of their religious life, because if that rain pond hadn't been there, their village would not have existed. Their ancestors would not have lived. Therefore, they wouldn't be alive. So they look on the pond as sacred. So we had a lot of trouble at first by, I'd say, religious leaders, witch doctors and others, who thought that we were insulting their sacred ponds. And we had to convince them that the guinea worm was an insult to the pond, that their gods wanted those ponds to be clean of this infection that punished his own people. So we had to go through some kind of a philosophical or theological explanation in order to convince them on occasion.
Well, speaking of theology, guinea worm is not just a disease. It is a worm. It's an animal. And I presume you would say it's one of God's creatures. And so how do you reconcile that, that if this is one of God's creatures, how can you then want to exterminate it from the earth?
Well, I have to say that guinea worm is not only one of God's creatures, but it's recognized in the Holy Bible. It's known as the fiery serpent, and it was looked upon as a curse on God's chosen people, the fiery serpent was, just like devastating drought or leprosy. And in my opinion, as a Christian, I don't have any doubt that God approved it when Jesus, say, would heal a person who was blind, maybe with trachoma, or with a river blindness, or maybe healed a person who was afflicted with being crippled, maybe from a case of guinea worm earlier, or when Christ touched a person and healed their leprosy. So I don't have any feeling of guilt about eradicating, getting rid of one of God's creatures, although it was created, but I don't think it was destined to permanently injure or kill or cause severe pain among God's people.
You mentioned the word neglected, that yes. Guinea worm is a neglected tropical disease, and that is, people talk about that, neglected in essence by the developed world. How do you make the case to Americans who are worried about raising their kids and keeping a job and keeping their home? How can you make them care about a disease they've never heard of in a country that they'll probably never visit?
Well, I would surmise that I have the same problem in this task as you might have in gaining enthusiastic listeners just to hear about guinea worm, because it's not known. But when I was a child, my mother was a registered nurse, and I and my classmates, my relatives, everybody, were afflicted with trachoma, blindness. And we were afflicted with polio. We were afflicted with malaria. We very seldom survived from pneumonia. One of my favorite aunts died with an infection of her throat. Now those afflictions can be very easily controlled by antibiotics, medicines that we didn't have before, polio vaccines. So when I try to equate for, say, potential funders, the blight of guinea worm on people now when they never have heard of it, I can equate them to some degree. Well, you remember when you were a child, you had a danger of malaria or polio or smallpox, and now all of those diseases have been eradicated. Help us do the same thing for the people who are suffering in Africa.
So, in essence, it is the morally right thing to do.
I don't have any doubt about that, yes. I feel morally justified in leading this campaign based on the work of experts like Dr. Don Hopkins, who has taught me everything I'm able to recite to you so glibly. But it's a labor of love for me. And the almost immediate beneficial impact of a good guinea worm eradication program is extraordinary, in that if everyone in a village, no matter how many have the disease, 1 year, will stay out of the pond with their emerging guinea worms, the next year they will have zero guinea worms, because this particular affliction has to go through a human body only in order to repeat itself the following year. So luckily for us and for the world, it doesn't depend upon going through goats or cattle or other animals that might drink the water. It has to be human body for some reason.
So if I might ask one final question. This is a critical time in Sudan. This is a rare window of peace in many decades of war, which has enabled you to come in and do the work on guinea worm eradication. Should fighting erupt again, and there is concern about violence, what would that mean for your goal of eradicating guinea worm from the planet?
It'll be a major setback for us, but you have to remember that the first time we came here and began to eradicate guinea worm, there was a horrible civil war going on that cost 2.3 million lives. And we had 110,000 cases of guinea worm then. We had the Comprehensive Peace Agreement concluded in 2005, and we did another survey a year later. We only had about 20,000 cases then. So what we did in the interim was to send in to southern Sudan, where we couldn't go, 9 million pipe filters, little tiny pipe filters that you see me wearing around my neck. So everyone who didn't have a big filter cloth to put over the mouth of a jug or the head of a bucket could wear that little pipe filter, and every time they drank a drink of water out of a filthy pond, they would suck the water through that pipe or straw, and the water would be filtered. So when we finally got back into Sudan, we found that those pipe filters had made a tremendous beneficial impact on the incidence of guinea worm in the endemic villages. So that was how we did it, almost in absentia. And so that was a very important thing for us to do. And I induced John Garang, who was a revered leader of South Sudan, always to wear a pipe filter around his neck to show his people that they ought to do the same thing. But we were able to have, as I said, 9 million of those pipe filters made for us, sponsored by the government of Norway, and they were actually put together by women in Nairobi in Kenya and then shipped into southern Sudan.
But if fighting breaks out, that will be a setback.
It will be a setback. We have to have security. Otherwise, the people will take their minds off guinea worm live in the villages, and also our volunteer workers. We now have 12,600 volunteer workers. They would turn their attention to other things other than eradicating guinea worm, and some of our professionals couldn't go in. And in a period of fighting, if we send in a pickup truck or a motorcycle or something to deliver supplies or to carry messages, then that's very likely to be confiscated by warriors on both sides who want it for military benefit. So, yes, we are very deeply concerned, not only for the well-being of the Sudanese people, but also for the guinea worm program, that peace prevail.
President Carter, thank you for your time.
I've enjoyed it talking to you. You asked some good questions. Thank you very much.
Former President Jimmy Carter ending this special podcast on the efforts to eradicate guinea worm in Sudan. You can see pictures from David Barron's trip to Sudan at theworld.org/health. That's also the place to find all of our stories related to global health. Again, that's at theworld.org/health.